This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. I'm your host, Edward Fraser. Got Matt Larkin and Ryan Kennedy with me here. Ken Campbell's on the phone. He's in Vegas covering the Stanley Cup. Kenny, you were at Media Day yesterday. What were some of the takeaways?
Surprised at how both teams were so loose. Like they didn't seem overwhelmed by the situation. They seemed to have a pretty good perspective. In particular the Golden Knights. I thought that they were they figured they were full marks for being here, and they didn't look like that they were in awe of the moment, or thinking that they shouldn't be here. They were just kind of, it was business as usual, and it should be a good series.
Kenny, I'm curious for your thoughts just on the Washington side of things, because and even when I talked to Barry Trotz a few months ago, it was always about the pressure that they felt. But in these playoffs, they just keep explaining to everybody how loose they feel, how tight knit they are. Did you get that vibe kind of just talking to any of the Caps yesterday?
Well, I think getting past the second round was huge. I think, and Brian McClellan and Barry Trotz, when I was speaking to them yesterday both talked about that, how, it was just a huge exhale after they got past Pittsburgh. And it's not like they think now that, they've accomplished anything, but I think that they're much more at ease. They've got that, the proverbial monkey off their back, and I think now they just go out and play. Like, they don't have to worry about expectation. They don't worry about sort of any kind of legacy stuff or anything. They can just go out and play.
And Kenny, as a guy who has covered dozens of finals, I'm curious for your thoughts just on the Vegas experience. And I mean, everything that's happened this season is like nothing we've ever seen. So do you get the sense that just the final, just the buzz around the city and the presentation of the games, is it different? Like, does it feel special because it's Vegas?
Well, it feels special because you're in the middle of the Las Vegas Strip, and so you don't, it's a pretty surreal place to begin with, right? So, you don't get the sense that it's lost in anything. I think, it's on the front page of the newspaper every day here. People are talking about it. Obviously, there's tons of people, thousands of people who go out to their practice every day in their practice facility and watch their practice. So, I've been in places where, you're there, you're right, you're 5 minutes from the arena, and you wouldn't have any idea that the Stanley Cup Finals going on. You don't get that here. You there's a pretty good vibe about it, and I think people are pretty stoked. I mean, obviously, it's the first time this has ever happened to anybody, because they've never had a pro team before, let alone a team that's been in a championship series. So, I think people here are pretty stoked about it. I think that there's a really good vibe. I think that that people are they're wrapped up in the Golden Knights fever here.
Is there anything you gleaned from Media Day from either team that has changed your opinion of who's going to win this series?
No, not really. I said last week on the podcast that I think it's going to go to game 7 of overtime. So I'm going to stick with that. For the third time in NHL history, it'll go to game 7, we'll go to overtime. Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final will go to overtime. But no, I didn't really see any red flags that would make me think, oh, geez, maybe that guy's overwhelmed with the situation, or he's, he's a little too tight or whatever. Like, I mean, I think you're dealing with one team that's kind of just rolling with the punches and being in the moment, and another team that's, like I talked about before, that's on this run that, after so many years of expectation and not being able to do it, are now here after not having that expectation. So, I think it should be a really good series. I mean, I think that the Vegas is seed will be a huge factor in it, and Washington's going to have to answer with, you know, they're going to have to match that speed, and they're going to have to be physical. So, yeah, no, I didn't really see anything in media data that would lead me to believe that, you know, either of these teams is kind of overwhelmed with the situation, or is there were no red flags. So,
most importantly, what's the buffet scene like out there?
The buffet scene?
Yeah, how many buffets have you hit so far?
I'm not a big foodie like you are. So, no. Anyways, I just for me, food is just sustenance. I don't worry too much about the whole sort of experience, but I actually, you know, I went out for dinner last night with our Erica Vanderveer, our art director. So she's in town climbing rocks or something, and we had dinner together, and just went out for some pizza, and then went to Dairy Queen after. So it's pretty standard stuff.
And then what happened, Ken? What did you brush your teeth and then go to bed?
Story.
Cool story, bro.
I went to the room and I did some writing, and then I went to bed. That was it. I lost $60 at the casino the first night I was here, though.
What were you playing?
I was just playing blackjack. That's all I play. Nice. I was like up like $150 at one point. And I should have just, like an idiot, I didn't stop playing. I blew the nest egg. right on the first night.
I'm sure you'll win it back, Kenny. Well, you go out and you have
yourself. Because that's the way it works.
Exactly.
I'm gonna go back. And yeah. I'm going to win it back, because that's how it works in Vegas, right?
That's exactly
right. The house never wins.
You go back the next time and you win it. That's the way it works. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be good.
All right, Kenny. Well, you go out and have yourself a nice jog, and we'll be in...
I will do that.
We will be in touch in the coming days, I'm sure.
Sounds good.
All right.
See you guys.
Take care, buddy. All right, as one championship series begins, another one ends. The Acadie Bathurst. Woo! Acadie Bathurst Teton win the Memorial Cup. Ryan, was there one standout player for you from that team who really kind of thrust them to that championship win?
Yeah, and I'm tempted to say Noah Dobson, who's up for the 2018 draft, because he's the most prominent prospect on their team, but I'm going to go a different way just to spread the love. Jeffrey Trouchon-Vier, who was actually just signed recently as a free agent by the San Jose Sharks, he's been amazing throughout the playoffs. I mean, he was the MVP of the Quebec League playoffs, and then for the Memorial Cup, 10 points in 4 games. Probably should have been the MVP. It went to Sam Steele of Regina, and of course Regina were the hosts, and the Pats made it to the finals, so fair play on that. But with VA, he's an older prospect. He's a 1997 birthday, so he'll be playing pro with the AHL's San Jose Barracuda next year, no doubt. I just like the package that he brings. He's really good shorthanded. He's got some great hands on him, so he can put the puck in the net as well, and obviously he can distribute. But I thought it was a really nice thing for his development to sort of check off those boxes, and to do so, he was their captain this year and last year, if I'm not mistaken. So you've got your leadership, you've got a guy with a pretty decent frame. I'm not sure how much offensive upside he has at the pro level. He was about a point per game guy this year in the regular season, but I think he really took off during the playoffs, and you want those clutch guys, and I think that VA, because he has a pretty well-rounded game and can be out there in different situations, I think he's a nice asset for San Jose now.
I think the Flyers are going to be pretty happy with Rubtsov as well.
Certainly, and this is a kid that, he came over to North America and, he was injured at first. It's been a while. He's trying to get used to a new culture. He was traded from Chicoutimi, so he could make a run. And yeah, he's a talented kid, and another player that we'll see in the pro ranks next year and see what he can do to step up. So it's funny, it's like it feels like it's been a long time since he was taken in the draft, but kids need to develop, and I think he's getting used to he's used to North America now, he's used to the style, and obviously he can succeed and put up points. So, yeah, certainly a good year for him.
I was impressed with the intangible of, like, you could tell he was not just a kid who's coming over here to develop to eventually make the pros. That kid cared. And you could tell by the excitement on his face throughout that tournament.
Yeah.
So I think the Flyers got a real good one there. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but we're in the horse-beaten business. The attendance.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, I'm going to just use this. I'm going to turn it as yet another excuse as to why the host team should not get an automatic bye.
Yeah, and, you know, Ken and I talked about this on the Prospect podcast a week or two ago, that it's such a tough thing to forecast. And it's funny because with Regina, you know, when they got the bid, it seemed like a really good scenario because the Pats were already a good team. They had a lot of returning players. So it's like, okay, well, they're already going to be one of the best teams in the dub, so that won't be a problem. But they actually struggled this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, they lost in the first round of the playoffs, but then, you know, they had a very nice Memorial Cup and got to the final. But it's tricky because their rink's not huge. So, you know, tickets were expensive for junior games.
Yes.
And, you know, it's come out that they had to pay, you know, several million dollars to host the event, and they're going to take a loss on it. But, you know, is it the prestige? Do you just have to accept that you're going to take a loss because you want to pack the stands?
Mm-hmm.
I think next year will be interesting because Halifax plays in a much bigger arena, and they've already come out with prices that are a little lower than in the past few Memorial Cups. So I think, you know, with the Mooseheads, they've already identified their market and their fans, and they know what they will pay for junior hockey, even though it is, you know, the pinnacle of the season. So I think that it'll be less of an issue next year because you're not constrained by the size of your rink in selling tickets. So they've got their price point, and the Mooseheads should once again be a very good team. And it's tough. I mean, we kind of have to talk about something every year with the Memorial Cup, whether it's the host team not being good enough or if it's attendance. But it's tricky because it's a four-team tournament.
It's not fair to the
weird
three teams. I mean,
yeah.
like 42-day layoff?
Yeah, something
I think
like
it was a 42-day layoff they
yeah.
had. If you gave the Arizona Coyotes or the Buffalo Sabres a 42-day layoff before playing in the Stanley Cup,
yeah.
they would give a champion. They would give one of these
they
two teams
a run
for the money.
Yeah.
It's not
fresh legs.
Fair.
Yeah.
It's not fair. They get to scout while they're not playing.
Mm-hmm.
They get rested. They get extra practice. It's just not a fair tournament, and that's why you're seeing it happen more and more often. Is that
yeah.
the host teams, after terrible playoffs, it's almost like a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Bow out in the first
yeah,
round
sure.
and have a hell of a Memorial Cup run because you're well rested.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is if they went to neutral zone locations where you didn't have a host team. Like, put it in Quebec City one year. I know Quebec has a team, but put it in Quebec City because they have an amazing rink.
Yeah.
Put it in Winnipeg.
Sure.
As long as it didn't conflict with, you know, the Jets in the playoffs. You know, put it in Vancouver. As long as the Canucks aren't in the playoffs, you schedule it that way. And, you know, the fourth team, maybe the fourth team is whoever is the highest ranked in the CHL
sure.
That didn't, you know, win their championship,
yep.
something along those lines. But it's, unless they change the tournament wholesale, like maybe you do it, you know, March Madness bracket style.
I'd love
I don't
it.
Know.
Oh,
you know.
That would be amazing. That would
be amazing. But there's always going to be some sort of problem, and right now it's a tricky one to get over. Because even when you think a team is going to be good, like Regina, they turn out to
yeah.
flame out, and then what do you do?
It just frustrates me because it's an excellent tournament. The quality of hockey is great, but I have a hard time taking it seriously because of that reason.
Yeah.
And I think the time has come where they need to seriously look at change there. I don't know what the
yeah.
answer is, but.
My other gripe is that they only play one game a day. It's like the longest tournament
oh, yeah.
in history. Like
yeah.
play two games a day,
totally.
Have off days. You could squish it. You know, you could squish it down, and I think it would be a lot more palatable for viewers
yeah.
because it would be more in their minds.
Yeah,
especially if you offer ticket bundles where you could. I think you get more.
Very
they,
true.
They could go see two games with one ticket or something
yeah.
like that. Yeah.
Turning back to the Stanley Cup, Matt, I want to start with you. Biggest X factor from each team in the final.
Interesting question. I think I have two. So I get a cop out. I have two per team. With Washington, I mean,
I know. I just want one.
I got X factors too. Man.
Damn it. Okay, fine. Because Tom Wilson's too easy, I'm not going to say Tom Wilson.
If you were going to say Tom Wilson, though, what would you say?
I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to say Nicholas Backstrom because he hasn't been himself throughout the playoffs, obviously physically, but if his thumb is working properly and he's back, having him as a number two center option and then giving two deadly lines for Washington, I think makes them a really tough team to stop, especially because Vegas doesn't have the same kind of star power. And on the other end of the ice, when it comes to Vegas, I mean, I think Alex Tuch is a very interesting player because Vegas is not going to be able to play heavy the same way that Washington is, but Tuch, I think, is an exception. So is Ryan Reeves, but I mean, Ryan Reeves is not going to be on the ice very often, but Alex Tuch is. And he's one of the only guys on Vegas' side of the puck that can answer the bell physically the way Washington can. And if he can establish that forecheck as a counterpunch to what we know Tom Wilson, the other X-Factor, is going to do to Vegas' relatively small defense corps, I think it's going to minimize the advantage that Washington has physically. So I think Tuch is a guy to watch very, very closely in this series.
Mm. For me, I'm looking at Andre Burakovsky in Washington. I think this is a kid that has found his confidence, at least in the short term. I think that, you know, the end of that Tampa series was huge for him. And, you know, as to Matt's point about Backstrom and his health, you know, if they can get Burakovsky to continue to roll, then all of a sudden that Washington attack is a lot harder to squash. On the Vegas side, I look at Nate Schmidt, and, you know, he is sort of their de facto number one defenseman, logging a ton of ice time. And it's kind of fun because he played for the Capitals last year.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he was their guy that they let go. Although apparently they tried to trade back for him and Vegas was like, nah, we think he'll be all right.
Good move.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, when you look at the challenges that Washington poses for Vegas, you know, Nate Schmidt is going to be out there a lot in a lot of situations. And, you know, he's going to have to use his skating, his stick, his smarts. Because he's not the biggest guy in the world, but we've seen how Vegas defends, and it's very impressive because a lot of it is, you know, using their speed, using their sticks, just, you know, taking away time and space. And I think, you know, Schmidt kind of leads the pack on the blue line, and for that reason, he's going to have to continue to play big because, you know, Vegas, they don't have those high-end talents, but what they have is an awesome collective,
yeah.
And I feel he's kind of the tip of the spear on the back end.
To me, the two number one defensemen are one of the most intriguing storylines of this Stanley Cup because both play big minutes. Washington, again, you know, they don't have a deep defense. Guys have stepped up, but
yeah.
John Carlson, I mean, he logs a ton of minutes. He's a true number one, but those minutes get harder as the playoffs go along.
Yeah.
And if it's a long series, as a lot of people expect it to be, those minutes get even harder. So which of these guys who are logging heavy minutes can continue that high level of play? I think that's one of the things that's going to kind of determine this series.
Mm-hmm.
The goaltending situation as well, that's one that I've found pretty intriguing and I want to get your guys' thoughts on, is at this point, Fleury, who's been good all season, Holtby, who's really heated up in the playoffs, who's the guy who has the advantage?
I mean, they're both playing fantastic hockey, but I think Fleury is on a different level. He's just unconscious right now. He's in the Giguère, Jonathan Quick, Tim Thomas,
Conn Smythe, Bill Raynford.
Yeah. He's got, like, and historically we've seen that it seems like when a goalie has it, he doesn't lose it in the final.
Mm.
I mean, unless he's Pekka Rinne last year. but most of the time,
Rinne
he doesn't lose it. And it seems like Fleury's got that juju this year. He's the guy that's going to have one of those runs that we talk about years from now. And Holtby's been very good, but I'd say he's been merely very good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that Holtby's been stealing games for the Capitals, whereas Fleury, we know, has been stealing games for Vegas, who is allowing more chances in the playoffs than it did during the regular season. And for that reason, I think you have to give the edge to the guy who's just playing out of his mind versus the guy who's playing quite well.
Yeah, I like Fleury as well, and part of it is the fact that he's been there, done that before. Like, Stanley Cup final, I mean, he's already got rings.
That's a good point.
You know, for him, it's funny to say there's no pressure on him because I know he wants to win the Stanley Cup,
yeah.
You know, again, and there's no question about that. But for Holtby, you know, it's a matter of, you know, he hasn't done it before. He hasn't been this far before. You know, what's it going to be like? What's the pressure going to be like? And, you know, as Matt said, he's been very good so far. But I just think for Fleury, this is just more, it's fun.
He's loosey-goosey. He's, you know, there's nothing, loose. There's really, I mean, yeah, there's
the happy-go-lucky guy.
But I mean, you could, Holby's a guy who needs that focus. You know, you can spray your water in the air as many times as you want after a goal. But, you know, you need that focus.
Heat versus ice. Who you got?
Doug Wilson. I'm a big fan, big proponent of Doug Wilson. I don't think there's been a better team that's rebuilt on the fly. This team looked like they were prepping for a rebuild, and suddenly they're back in contention year after year. But the Evander Kane contract, I'm not so sure. That's a surprising deal to me. Matt, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I wrote about this on our blog as well, but the term and money, so 7 years, $7 million, they both put a ton of pressure on Kane because it's not just paying him for what he's accomplished. It's not even that, which is even dangerous in and of itself. It's paying him for what he has not yet accomplished, which is, you know, score 40 goals. A $7 million player, that's not even a 30-goal scorer they're asking him to be. They're asking him to be a 40-goal scorer, and they're asking him to do it regularly for at least, you know, half that contract. For his final prime years, whereas we know Kane in the last five seasons has averaged 63 games. He plays a really aggressive and crash and bang style, and this year I think he played 78 games, and that was the highest total of his career. So I worry that we're going to look back on this kind of like the Nathan Horton deal that Columbus handed out in 2013. And I mean, Horton's career ended from a back injury, but I'm not saying Kane's career is going to end, but I'm saying
they play
he
hard
could games. Break down. They both play a pretty similar style, I think, a power forward, aggressive, crash and bang, and score goals. So it's just tough because I think Kane is a good player to sign. He is a great fit in San Jose. And if you were paying him, I don't know, $5.5 million for 5 or 6 years, I'd say, okay, yeah, he's earned that. But now you're asking him to do something he hasn't. And it's funny you mentioned Doug Wilson, Ed, because I think in Wilson's case, and this is a reader asked me about this too, what was Doug Wilson doing? And I thought, Doug Wilson knows that I think this era of the Sharks is only a few years away from sort of ending. If you look at Brent Burns' age, Joe Pavelski, they're in their 30s now. And I think Doug Wilson probably knows, hey, the second half of Evander Kane's deal, if it goes south, I'm not going to be here. So he's trying to...
Okay, so it's on ownership.
I think that Doug Wilson is trying to help this team win now. And it's a great point about ownership, Ed, because for a recent story I was doing, I was talking to some GMs about free agency and the competition and why it drives up the price. And it was Ray Shiro who said to me, people don't realize often that the owner is the one that really is approving the money. And it's not really the GM's decision. It's the owner that sort of carries that responsibility, right? So in this case, maybe that was what happened with San Jose.
James Neal and JVR might be the happiest guys on the planet.
Yeah, good point.
Big time.
Yeah.
Because those guys, I mean, better proven production over the past few seasons, they've got to be looking at similar deals, if not way higher.
Yeah, it jacks up the market Absolutely. Like crazy. Yeah. Especially if you're JVR, who scored 36 this year, you can be able to just look and say, hey, what the hell?
Yeah.
Give me $8 million.
Yeah. And then that's not unrealistic. The only thing I would wonder about the Kane deal is that in 3, 4, 5 years, is $7 million a year going to be second line money, third line money, because the cap's going to continue to go up? That's my only wonder, is that maybe these guys, you know, we look at the numbers right now and go, holy poop, that's a ridiculous number in term. We're trying to clean it up here, folks.
Yeah.
But that's my only thing, is that maybe it's not as bad as we think.
Yeah, and glass half full, I think there's a real fit there in San Jose. You know, I was on the conference call with Evander Kane and Doug Wilson and Pete DeBoer, and you know, Kane feels wanted in San Jose, and for the Sharks, they see a player that wants to win and be a part of, you know, an elite organization, and they love that. And you know, Kane said, like, the reason this came together so quickly is because we have a mutual goal.
Yeah.
And I think you make a good point about the salary, and yeah, you know, to Matt's point, maybe the end of the contract, he's not as prolific. But, I mean, that's the way you build these deals right now. And maybe when he's, you know, 32 or 33, he's more of a third-line guy. But maybe he's still humming along because, I mean, he's a pretty fantastic athlete. He always has been. And, you know, you look at what he can do on the ice. And he doesn't fight much anymore, because why would you want to fight Evander Kane?
Mm-hmm.
He's a little He's pretty good at it.
He is very
good. You know,
it's funny.
He's good at
it. I was with Kane last year interviewing him, and I told him, I was like, I looked up hockeyfights.com. Did you know you haven't lost a fight in 5 years? He was like, cool.
Yeah.
And he is named after Evander Holyfield. Like, it's not a coincidence. He trained in boxing. His dad was a boxer.
Yeah, and he one-punched Matt Cook, which was the greatest moment in NHL history. It goes, Matt Cook one-punched, 72 Summit Series. Yeah. And then
Vegas is number three.
Vegas is three, and then something else.
David Quinn is a new coach in New York. Jim Montgomery is a new coach in Dallas. Let's include Dave Haxtell as well. Does three make a trend? Is NCAA coaching hiring out of the NCAA? Is this a thing that NHL teams are doing now? Because it hasn't happened a lot in the past. Very, very rare.
It has not, and I think that's why you can definitely call it a trend right now, because it had been such a foreign concept before. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting is, you know, you see these hires, and it really hews to the idea that the NHL has become a young man's league. And I think what you see is, with Quinn and Montgomery, they were great motivators. You know, Haxtell obviously had great success at North Dakota as well. But when you look at these NHL teams, you say, okay, well, you know, the Rangers were always the team that would just sign free agents when they were 30 years old or whatever. And Dallas, you know, they've been a bit of an older team with guys like Spezza, and, you know, even Radulov is, you know, coming back from the KHL. He's not young. But you do need to have those young guys, and both teams have players that have either made their debuts already in the NHL or are on the cusp, and they're going to need a coach who knows how to handle them. And I think with Quinn and Montgomery, you have that. And when you look at the success that Haxtell has, you know, I mean, the Flyers are just kind of okay right now, but goaltending is the big thing there. Yeah. And there's not a lot Haxtell can do about
that. They're only a couple parts away from being.
They're only a couple parts away. And I think you see some of their young players have shown very nice growth. You look at Konechny and Provorov, and, you know, Nolan Patrick quietly had a very nice rookie campaign. So, you know, it's working. And I think, you know, now that a couple of teams have done it, all of a sudden it's a thing that can be done, you know? Before, I think it was just, you know, maybe teams thought like, oh, well, you know, the college schedule is pretty sparse. This is 82 games, and, you know, you're dealing with a static roster pretty much versus guys changing as often as they do. But I think that, you know, when you see the ability to recruit, which now, you know, going back to free agency is just kind of college recruiting on another level, you know, that was a strength for both those programs, BU and Denver. And I think that, you know, the sort of time has come.
It's interesting, too, because I see even more of a fit with David Quinn than I do Jim Montgomery. I mean, not that Montgomery isn't going to do a good job, but I think there's more pressure on Montgomery because he's taking over a team, and he has no experience coaching at the NHL level, not even as an assistant or anything like that. But he's taking over a team that really needs to win now. I mean, Ben Bishop's in his prime. Tyler Seguin has 1 year left on his deal. You got to prove to Tyler Seguin this team can win a cup with him there. Jamie Benn's making $9.5 million. They made a bunch of big free agent signings last year. Whereas Quinn in New York, it kind of reminds me a lot more of Haxtell in Philadelphia, where you're coming into a team that's changing its mentality. I mean, we know that the Rangers sent that letter to the fans committing to youth. They've got three first-round picks. The New York Rangers have three first-round picks. Wow. In the same season. I can't believe it.
Not the same decade.
Yeah, not the same decade. Season. The same season. And they have 5 picks in the first 2 rounds. You've got Elias Anderson to go around, and Philip Chytil as well, or Chytil.
Chytil. We don't have that letter in our alphabet.
But you've got a younger team to build around, and I think that the hiring of Quinn is part of sending that message to your fan base that, look, we're bringing in a guy who's a molder of young minds. So I'm pretty intrigued to see what happens with Montgomery and Dallas, just because it's not as natural of a fit at first glance.
For Montgomery and Dallas, I think it's more of a he'll help with pace.
Mm.
And he'll help with some of the details that were lacking in Dallas before.
The Rangers are rebuilding. Does Henry Lundqvist get dealt this year?
Quickly! He doesn't want to.
Wrong! It doesn't matter if he wants to.
He wants to go down with the ship.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I know. It's boring, but he wants to stay.
Yeah.
Does he have an NTC?
Yeah.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah, he's got all the power.
Yeah. Fine.
Why would you leave Manhattan?
Speaking of moves, oh, we're on to reader questions. I want a jingle for reader questions.
It's reader questions.
You guys are awesome. Yeah. Kevin O'Brien asks, more likely to move this offseason, Tavares or Carlson? Ryan?
Erik Karlsson. Yeah, I get a vibe. I think Tavares could test free agency, but the vibe I'm getting is that, you know, with Lamoriello coming in, I think there's going to be stability there. And I think for Tavares, you know, he can see some of the good things the Islanders have. And I think it's more likely that he re-signs with them than Karlsson staying in Ottawa.
I think Kane signing, because San Jose was a natural fit, mm-hmm. kind of takes away the number one option for Tavares.
Meaning he'll save a lot of money.
And I agree. I have this theory that I've been building the last few weeks. It was first story I was working on Ilya Kovalchuk, and I spoke to some people that were in the know, and the indication was that possibly the people who know Kovalchuk the best are going to be the one that's pursuing him. So hint, hint, it could be Don Waddell in Carolina or Lou Lamoriello, wherever he landed. And now he's now he's an Islander. My theory is that they're going to sign Ilya Kovalchuk. They're going to dangle that idea to John Tavares as an enticing factor for him to come back and prove that, hey, we're going to try and take a run at this thing. I still think people often forget that the best option or the most likely option is when a big free agent is going to open market. It's the front runner is still his original team.
Sure.
Right? You're still uprooting your life. So
yeah.
I think Tavares is going to stay. And I've been saying that all along, so I'm sticking with that. And Carlson more likely to move, yes.
I don't follow the KHL very closely, but did Ilya Kovalchuk become a fantastic goaltender when he was playing in the KHL? Because otherwise, the Islanders are still going to suck next year.
Yeah. They've got good goaltending prospects, so someday.
Yeah, they have a good goalie prospect in the KHL.
Right. Is he going to play next year?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then they can re-sign Halak. Or they can go and get...
Sign Carter Hutton.
Carter Hutton. Fantastic.
Trade for Garrett Sparks?
I mean, that's the Islanders are not close to winning. All the Ilya Kovalchuks in the world are not going to turn the Islanders around.
But you're selling Tavares on an 8-year plan now, right? If you're signing it for 8 years. So you can say, hey, you know, we might still suck for another year, but don't worry. You know, Ilya Sorokin's coming, Kiefer Bellows is coming...
Okay, so are the Islanders a team that can compete for the Stanley Cup realistically in 2 to 3 years? That's what I mean.
No.
And this is why I grip my teeth over this whole thing. If he's winning, 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 you talk to him, he said winning, winning, winning. Mm. So this is what makes me think, like, I like the theory, I like all the machinations behind there, but to me, if winning is your priority, the Islanders are not the team.
I guess if you're saying 3 or 4 years, then by then Sorokin's there, and maybe Sorokin's Andrei Vasilevsky.
Mm-hmm. That's a big gamble.
Goalies are the easiest to find, even though a couple of teams have bunged it up. Like
says every like Philadelphia Flyers fan.
But, I mean, compared to a number one center and a number one defenseman, like, goalie is the easiest of those three to get.
Yeah, fair enough.
And never underestimate how much moving sucks. Everyone hates moving, right?
True.
All human beings. So if you're telling John Tavares, okay, we can't guarantee a cup, but by you being there, the odds go up, and you don't have to move.
And you also live in New York.
You get to live in New York, and you get to stay 8 years instead of seven in a new place. That could be
the
tiebreaker.
The Brinks truck is getting backed up for him.
Oh, yeah.
No matter.
Well, especially because of Evander Kane. Like, Tavares can say, Evander Kane, $7 million. Give me $25 million. It's got to be 20%.
Let me get the math in. Yeah, no.
So $16 million. Yeah. If cap goes to 80, that's $16 million would be the maximum.
Wow. I don't think he's going to get 16.
Yeah, I don't think
so. If you want to win, you're not taking $16 million. The Minnesota Wild, Paul Fenton's the new GM there. Patrick Gage, sorry. I don't want to make it like I'm asking.
Right.
Patrick Gage is asking, what kind of moves could Paul Fenton make, if any, to turn the Wild around?
Paul Fenton, I think, is in a tough spot. This is part of the reason why Chuck Fletcher is gone, I guess, is just the contracts the Wild handed out. I mean, you took your shot. You gave your huge money to Ryan Suter and Zach Parise 5 years ago.
Ryan Suter worth every penny.
Yes, absolutely. But now, I mean, Suter's 33 years old, and Parise's got one of the biggest albatross deals in the NHL, unfortunately. And the Wild are really hamstrung in terms of the cap. Like, they don't have a lot of room to add pieces. So with Paul Fenton, I guess what you're asking him to do is figure out who to trade.
And I don't know who that's going to be because, I mean, Matt Dumba, he was on the block for a while, but he had a breakout season. You really need him. And the same with Jason Zucker. He had a great season too, a 30-goal season. So I don't know who goes. I mean, I'm looking at the roster now. Which piece of salary are you going to clear? Is it Nino Niederreiter, who's a very coveted two-way player? He's physical, but he did regress a lot this year, and he's suddenly not necessarily earning the $5.25 million cap hit. And considering the Wild do have some good forward prospects in the system, do you have to cash in Niederreiter to clear some space? I don't know.
I think best case scenario for them is for Paul Fenton to come out and say, like, okay, we need to clear out some brush here, and, you know, they got to find a new place for Tyler Ennis, a new place for Marcus Foligno. They need to clear out some space for the Jordan Greenways, the Luke Cunnins, the Joel Eriksson X, and let those kids develop in an environment where it's okay to fail, at least in the short term. I mean, Eriksson X has kind of already gone through that, and Cunnins had a bit of a taste, and then he's, you know, had the injury. But I think you have to have a roster where you let those kids grow and you say, we're not a Stanley Cup contender. We're probably not even a playoff team this year, but that's okay. And it's tough because they do have those here and now veterans and they have a pretty good framework to go on. But in the next couple of years, like, Eric Staal's not going to be there. Matt Cullen's not going to be there. You got to make room for the young kids. Eventually, Kirill Kaprizov is coming over and he'll have an impact. So I think what you do now is you try to shed as much as you can in the short term. Get some more picks and prospects if you can in those deals, or at least just get rid of the salaries. And that's when you make your move once the Greenways and Cunnins are kind of like fourth, fifth-year pros. I think that's all you can do at this point because, like you said, like, some of the contracts are just like albatrosses. Right. So you do what you can. You say to the fans, like, look, I'm going to clear this out, but it's going to take a while.
And this era in the Central belongs to Winnipeg and Nashville anyways, right? So you're not going to have a better team than them for several years. So
is Bruce Boudreau the guy to lead this team going forward? New GM. I mean, you got to figure.
It's hard to put him
on the hot seat because the expectations are so low.
He gets
low,
a year of leash, and if they bought him out this year, then I think you walk away from Boudreau.
But maybe you don't mind him bottoming out because he's a pretty good, like, peppy coach, a motivator. He's been there. He's good with the players. If your expectations are such that you don't think you'll even get to the second round, then if he's okay with that.
I don't think you're going to get to the playoffs. He's a good team coach. I'm not sure he's a good development coach.
He's a turnaround coach. I think he's good at unlocking guys who are on the verge of breakouts. He finds a way to deploy them. Like Michael Granlin broke out under Boudreau, right? So I don't know. I predict that he's going to be gone in another year.
Okay. We're out of time for this week. If you're listening on Monday, look forward to the game. If you're listening on Tuesday, congratulations to the fill-in team here for winning game one. That's all we've got this week. For Ryan Kennedy and Matt Larkin, Ken Campbell in Vegas, I'm Edward Fraser. Thanks for listening.